When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're going to bring to you here on Barmy Army TV and Shackles Are Off podcast, well, something pretty special. It's the 11th year anniversary. I know, a little bit rogue, but that's how we do things here. A little trip down memory lane of the World Cup final. And we're talking the T20 World Cup final in the Caribbean, which featured the likes of Kevin Peterson, Paul Collingwood, Tim Bresnan, and Ryan Sidebottom. And we've actually got three of those names joining us on this call. Chris Millard from the Barmy Army. This is going to be awesome. Really looking forward to speaking to these boys and seeing what's going on. And fond memories as well, not just from us as kids, actually, it's got to be said, watching it, but also from the Barmy Army in general, because it's one of the favourite ever moments in English cricket.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I know a lot of people that were there, and I know a lot of people obviously were watching it, and you have memories. It's one of those you know where you were moments, no matter what age you were or what you were doing in life. You know the time that England won the T20 World Cup, the same with the ODI World Cup in 2019. So it's been a great pleasure, actually, during lockdown to watch it back on the replays on Sky when they've not been able to show anything else. They've showed the replay of that a fair few times, I must admit. I always stick it on and always watch it. And it's great to see some familiar faces now. We've done the podcast, we've had these guys on, and it's great to see and hear them talk about what happened on the day and what happened in that tournament. So can't wait to hear from Collie, Brezzy and Siddy. And yeah, let's get them on.
Yeah, well, we started off by asking them what, apart from winning the trophy, what was their favourite memory of that tournament?
Gone. For me, it was just the team spirit and camaraderie that we had. We had a talented group of players, and everything just clicked into place. You know, under Collie's guidance as well, he brought sort of a calmness and sort of that freedom of going out and just enjoying the tournament, enjoying playing, you know, in big games, and it certainly paid off for all of us. We played so much better. I think, you know, Collie, and I'm not blowing his own trumpet because he's here with us, but he certainly got an extra few percentage out of all the players just because of how he spoke, you know, how he wanted us to play, what type of cricket he wanted us to play. And it certainly worked for us. We were outstanding on that tournament, most definitely.
Siddy, you're very kind this morning, aren't you, mate?
Pleasure, captain.
Jesus. I tell you what, it wasn't... You say it was underrated by many. It wasn't underrated by us. And still to this day, that's meant so much, just winning that tournament and the memories that we created in a short space of time over the 3 weeks, I think it was incredible. And memories that last forever. And it was such a powerful kind of 3 weeks that you just... Times like this, when you see each other, you just start smiling. And that's all it takes, is like a little smile, because you know you've been through something that was special in your lives. So we didn't underrate it. I would say when we got back home and went to Downing Street and David Cameron did a speech and said, well done to Colin and the boys.
I remember that.
I think that was slightly underrated, but But no, it was almost perfect. I mean, for us, it was like a juggernaut that just gaining momentum all the way through the tournament. We scraped through the group stages early on. And then from that point, we just got stronger and stronger. And it was almost like that, as City said, that confidence and the togetherness just grew all the time. And it was really an approach that Andy Flower had, we discussed before we got to the tournament. Whatever we'd done in the past never worked. We were always far too conservative, whether it be selection, whether it be our approach. And we took a few risks. We took a risk in terms of let's just select some really kind of different players. Kiesewetter Lum at the top of the order was so influential in getting the team off to a good start. But not just the players that we selected, but the approach. And I think City's right. We took a gamble and we just said, look, lads, enjoy the next 3 weeks. Just train hard, but apart from that, off the field, go and play golf, get around the pool if you want to, enjoy the Caribbean. And we actually had an amazing time off the pitch as much as we did on it. And I think sometimes, you know, when you're in international cricket, you've got to do all those one percenters off the pitch. You've got to do the gym. You've got to do this. But this was just a short period for us. And I said to Andy, I said, listen, let's forget about 6 months down the line, the Ashes and all this kind of stuff. Let's just enjoy here and now and see how that actually takes us, how far that takes us in terms of just having a smile on your face. And thankfully, it worked. I mean, if it didn't work, we'd have been seen as like drunkards around the pool, having pina coladas at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and off playing golf all the time. So it was a bit of a gamble.
We looked more like a pub team, mate. We were like a pub team.
But it worked.
It was brilliant. Yeah, it did.
We celebrated hard, didn't we, afterwards?
Yeah, it did work. I had a bloody great time, let me tell you, for 3 weeks.
Yeah. Like, how good was it standing? Last man standing?
On the night, like, on the night of the win.
Oh, I can't remember that. I can't remember anything.
I can't remember past 9 o'clock.
Yeah. I remember Yard's back, Michael Yardy bouncing, like a bouncing bomb either side, just knocking people out of the way. Then that was early doors in one of the nightclubs we went in. I can't remember which one. It was Harbour Lights City.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember that being just laughing at him, like thinking he's like absolutely annihilated, but it was hilarious.
I think he was singing West Ham songs.
He probably was, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, yeah. He had his tattoo out as well, didn't he? Yeah, his big tattoo out. Come on, you hammers, and I'm forever blowing bubbles. I remember just like Collie said, just having like unbelievable fun for 3 weeks. And like it was work hard, and then whatever you do away from here is your own time. And we certainly made the most of it. There was just no pressure. You didn't feel judged for going out and having a beer under Collie's reign. And none of the coaching staff either were judging, because they were most likely parked up next to you on a table in the same bar. So, it was absolutely a fantastic experience and fantastic to play cricket that way. And I think everyone, you know, it was so relaxed, and that, you know, transferred onto the pitch as well. I just one thing about that final day, we were in Harbour Lights, weren't we? I actually took my wife and kids, were on a family holiday, and I took them last January or January before. And I walked in and I was literally going, oh no, yeah. Flashbacks of doom. Like, this is the scene. This is the scene. Because lads were just buying drinks, weren't they? And people were buying us drinks. And there were just tables and tables of rum and cokes literally surrounding us. You didn't have to go to the bar. You just picked them up and necked it. And then, you know, having drinking contests and all sorts. Spraying champagne at each other. Oh, it was just ridiculous.
Why not? You've just won the World Cup, haven't you? I mean, Chris, you obviously know the Harbour Lights very well, mate, because it's a popular Barmy Army spot when you go on tour. We spoke to Jimmy Anderson ages ago about, we asked him about this, and he said that it was his favourite tour ever because he was basically a passenger. And I mean, he couldn't get in the team. So he was, you know, he was basically like, well, you know, doing all the stuff that you guys were saying, but just like loving it. And they didn't feel like sort of cast out or anything, just like fully just enjoyed the whole thing. And that seems to be like a whole theme of it.
I think he said stag do, Greggy. Exactly. Yeah. That's
what
the words
that he said. It was a stag do for the players that weren't playing.
Well, yeah.
But we had to slightly rein it in a little bit. You know, we have a job to do at the end of the day, but it was enjoy yourself as much as possible without going over. Without, he said, what did you say, Col? Just let's not have any Fred Lowe incidents.
Yeah, well, I think Andy was always just don't get arrested. I think that was
quite a low bar.
I think that was his message. But I do remember kind of as the tournament went on, obviously you celebrate your wins, you celebrate your success. If someone's done something special in the game, then you have a few beers. And I remember we were celebrating well after our wins. We had some magnificent wins along the way and in some great venues. You're playing in the Caribbean and after the group stages where we were in Guyana, which wasn't so, you know, amazing. Then you move on to kind of St. Lucia and Barbados and venues like that. It's obviously, it just lends itself to, you know, enjoying the restaurants, the bars. And we had some great celebrations after the wins. And I remember getting to the semi-final and, you know, Andy, who obviously won the game, and Andy was like, right, Collie, I think the boys just need to calm down. And I said, Andy, we're in a World Cup final, mate. Whatever we've been doing, let's keep doing it. And he was like, yeah, but the boys have been going pretty hard. We're in a final now. This is important. And I was like, and I was really strong. I said, Andy, let's let the boys go. They're having fun. You can see they're playing with a smile on their faces. Let's not get cold feet now. Let's not change anything now because we're actually in the final. And he was like, okay, yeah, fair enough. But we had a special team, and to me, we went on a 9-game unbeaten run through that tournament, and then afterwards as well. And the one thing for me was the bowlers, and I've got two of them here on this call. I could just literally just say, can you do this? And we'll have this field. And they were producers. So the skill level was incredible. If they had to bowl a slow ball bouncer, they produced it. There was a slow ball bouncer. If there was a wide Yorker, if it was a heavy length, the first six overs, we always spoke about keeping the basics. Heavy length over middle stump. And if the batsmen want to try to do things, then allow them to do it. So you know, they're going to have to take a risk to do it. And it was real simple plans. And I know, like, slow ball bouncers don't sound simple, but we all backed the bowlers to do them at the back end, the last five, the last kind of five overs. And Brezzy, you resorted to your Yorkers. You were very good at bowling your slow ball and Yorkers. City was more slow ball bouncers. Brody was slow ball bouncers. And obviously they had the spin twins of Swanee and Yards, who were two completely different bowlers. Through the middle, Swanee was more of a gambler, but he had a lot of respect from the opposition, so they didn't actually take that many risks against him. They tried to come after Yards. Yards was just firing the ball. And very canny in the way that he changed his pace. And this group of bowlers in that 9-game unbeaten run didn't go for over 149 runs. You're going to win most of your games if you don't go over 149 runs. And And to me, that was the main reason. I always think you win big tournaments, you win World Cups if you've got a good bowling unit. Ashes as well. I think those big, big tournaments, you've got to make sure your bowling unit's on song. And it was incredible, that bowling unit. Obviously, we had the likes of Lum and Kieswetter at the top of the order who were just got us off to great starts. We never really had to try to catch up games. KP was way ahead of his game in that era. And he brought a calmness and a power that, you know, we hadn't really utilised before in World Cups. And then, you know, Morgs, a young Irish kid who's just a free spirit. And, you know, and Luke Wright coming in six. It's, you know, a great, one of England's greatest T20 cricketers who's been a T20 renegade and gone around all the world leagues and played in T20 cricket. So it was just a fantastic, you look back and it just every single cog worked and came together and that's why you can always look back and go, that was a real team. Didn't have to change the team at all. We kept the same team all the way throughout, apart from when KP went home for the berth. And it was just everybody knew their roles. Everybody knew what they had to do. And if they did their part, then everyone else did their part. We won games of cricket. It was as simple as that.
And lads, I mean, you must have loved playing under the freedom of that and the fact that you've got a skipper who was just backing you, because you boys were just doing those things that Collie spoke about on demand. And the fact that you had KP, who was player of the tournament, and all the other names that Collie's just mentioned, that frees you up a little bit, doesn't it, when you're bowling? And yeah. I mean, that must have been awesome for you boys.
I remember
it helps when you're hung over as well, I think.
I remember one of the games in, I think it was Guyana or St. Lucia, the wind played a massive part. And we set this field and I was like, I'm not sure about this. Coley's like, look, I don't care if you bowl three wides this over. Like, if you get wider three times, I don't care. Just make sure you don't get it that side with the wind. And I was like, okay. And I ended up bowling like three or four wides, didn't I? You were just like, mate, it's working. Just keep going. And end of day, I only went for like 8 or 9, but that was good enough, you know, because if you get it up in the wind, blokes were getting smashed for, you know, 20 in and over. So, you know, the assessment of the conditions at that time, obviously a credit to Colin, the backroom staff, support staff who were doing all the stats and analysis and stuff like that. But yeah, it was like, look, I don't honestly give an F if you get widened, just don't get it for six over there with the wind, you know.
Siddy, what was that like? I mean, look, everybody, you were joint top wicket taker, weren't you, for England there? And that was, you just basically freed yourself up. You rediscovered, like, your very, very best form, didn't you, at the right time? That must have been quality.
Yeah, I think it's a confidence thing, isn't it? We were, you know, just so confident as a team, and you know, confidence breeds a winning sort of mentality, and it allows you to just go out there and you don't think of the occasion or who you're playing against. You just go out there and enjoy, and you know, you just concentrate solely on yourself, you know, and what your job is or your role is. And, you know, I knew that I was opening the bowling. I'd bowl maybe 1, 2 or 3 overs, depending on how it went. And then I was always going to bowl at the death, whether it be the 18th, 19th, 20th over. So we all had a different game plan, and you know, my plan was to, you know, heavy length, and then at the back end, you know, like Collie alluded to, sort of slow ball bouncers and yorkers, and it worked a treat. But you know, one bowler doesn't make a tournament, and we did play so well as a team. We bowled well as a unit. We were outstanding, and our batting lineup was just so solid. And you grow in confidence, and each and every game we just got better and better and better. And like Collie said, we, you know, when you get to the final, you don't want to change anything you do, whether it on or off the field. We still celebrated our semi-win. And we just, I think the final, we did think we were going to win. I mean, you don't turn up thinking, yes, we're going to win. We're going to batter Australia. You know, it's going to be a tough game. But we were very quietly confident, I felt, just leading up to the final because of how we played and that team spirit and everything we had amongst it. But, I mean, one thing, David Saker, you know, our bowling coach at the time, these things you kind of underestimate. We watched little videos before every game of opposition, and normally you overanalyze and you're like, these are his four boundary shots. These are how he's playing. He's in great form. All we watched was how they got out.
And, I love that.
And, you know, whether off stump and middle stump went flying. And weirdly enough, again, something like that is a massive confidence booster. We weren't watching him, you know, smash it everywhere. It was just like, how many times they got the hobs knocked out. And it helps, you know, the lad's like, oh, yeah, you know, he's got a problem. He's going to, you know, he's hopeless. David Warner, he's crap. He's watching getting balled out. So, you know, those little things as well do make a huge difference. And we enjoyed the tournament. We played so well.
I remember Nathan Lehman, our analyst, and still is our analyst, he came to me about 6 months before the tournament. And I asked him, I said, look, can you get some stats on Yorkers? What is officially the best ball to bowl in the last kind of 3-4 overs of a T20? I played a bit in IPL. I was very strong. I'd come out of the IPL, I think, and left-arm bowlers in the back end were averaging about, I think at the time it was something like 10 runs less than right-arm bowlers. And which is, to have someone like Siddy, who was so accurate at delivering his skill, it was a godsend. So there was a few things that came out of IPL that I was like, right, can I take that into our international team? Can I take it into the England team? And I asked Nathan Lehman, I said, listen, what's the crack on Yorkers? Because in IPL, all I see is if someone misses a Yorker by 6 inches, it's gone. And he came up with this grid system of your red zone. If you miss your mark here, like Yorkers, he said, if you nail a Yorker, you obviously your average is very low, your strike rate's very good, but he said there's a very, very small margin of error. Whereas he says there's this zone up here, and it was like you had this kind of meter squared zone, which was head height way outside off stump. That he said, it's almost like bowling a Yorker, but you've got so much more margin for error. It's a bigger space. And it was literally a long hop outside off stump. And he said, if you take pace off it up there, then you're not going to go for any runs. Stats tell you, out of all the balls that he's put into his system, you're not going to go for many runs. And it was really that kind of forward thinking and idea that, oh, maybe we can get ahead of the game. And I think we were ahead of the game at the time. Batsmen didn't really know how to cope with it because we brought both the fielders up. We brought third man, fine leg up. And we were saying, take the outfielders on if you want. And you didn't have enough pace to knock it over the top of the third man or even fine leg. And I think it took a long time for batsmen to actually come up with a plan against it. And we were almost like ahead of the game in terms of all the other teams because of that. So even though it was just a free spirit and it was an amazing kind of team camaraderie, there was things in behind the scenes that were going on to get us to that point. And certainly, you know, having an analysis like that, who was thinking outside the box, was I think that was a great starting point. But I remember Siddy, I actually bowled you one over too many in the first six overs because you were flying. I mean, you were bowling gas as well. It was swinging. You're obviously getting a couple of wickets, and I actually knew that I was taking a risk bowling in that third over in the first six, and that I wouldn't have my banker at the back end. And we got hurt a little bit on the last 10 overs, but we'd had such a good first 10 overs that it didn't really hurt us too much. And because my plan was very similar. I just bowled you two overs at the top. Obviously, Brodie and Brezzy. And then you had two spinners just coming on in the middle. And then you lads were coming at the back end. It was like a simple game plan. But yeah, you were on fire that day. You were obviously flying in and good bounce and carry on that pitch and took wickets.
Well, with the slow ball bounces, I was like, when you first introduced it and you sort of said to all the boys, like, this is what we're going to do. I remember our first couple of sessions, I was like a kid in a sweet shop. We were like, bloody hell, this is going to work. It's like, what is this? Slow ball bounces. It's unheard of. And it would just, it would all something very new. And we loved it. I remember all the bowlers sort of laughing and joking and having a bit of fun with it. And it we knew that it worked, and it worked straight away. And it, you know, it worked brilliantly throughout the tournament. It was awesome.
Amazing. Collie, just a question for you, I guess. You look at England's ODI side and how far back the prep went to win that World Cup in 2019. How far back did it go for you? Were you working on this like 4 or 5 years out, or was it a shorter time phase that you looked at?
Mate, this was literally, apart from the analysis from Nathan Lehman, who, as I said, I think was probably 5 or 6 months before the tournament. Apart from that, this was lastminute.com. And the reason being, we had a lineup that we were going to go in with, and if it wasn't for that Lions game in Abu Dhabi, we played like a couple of practice games against the Lions. If it wasn't for that, I don't think we'd have had our eyes opened. And this is where I'm saying we took a risk, because Michael Lum and Craig Kieswetter absolutely smashed our bowlers. And they did, you know, hats off. They played unbelievably well. And it wasn't to me, I wasn't scared that my bowlers weren't good enough. I was like, wow, these batters are playing a different game here. And no disrespect to, I think Joe Denley was in the side at the time, maybe Belly, Trotty was in the side. We kind of had, and it might have been the approach, it might have been, you know, the approach that we had before, but we were very conservative. And I learned something from that tournament, that you don't win big tournaments if you're conservative. I always feel as though you've got to be on the more aggressive side of the line. You've got to be ahead of the game. You've got to be doing stuff that's slightly different to all the other international teams. And we were far too conservative in World Cups. We didn't take risks. And now I'd seen two players that could actually take those risks. And if we give them the freedom, if we give them that license, and we give them that kind of that comfort zone, that if you do get out in the first couple of overs and we're asking you to do that, there's no problem. And the rest of your teammates know it's no problem. That's your job. If there's an off spinner bowling to you in the first over, Keezy, take him down. Same as Lummy, if there was a left arm spinner bowling to him, you've got the license, take him down. If you get out, it's not a problem. That's your job. And this wasn't just said to the individuals. This was said in team meetings, so everyone knew that was a team plan. And if they got out, they come into the dugout, it'd be bad luck, mate. Next time, you'll get them. And I think that to me was as powerful as anything else. Everyone knew that they were getting the backing from the rest of the peers. But this was, you know, if it wasn't for that Abu Dhabi game, and that wasn't long before the tournament, I don't think we'd have been as successful as we were. So that was lastminute.com. And really the approach, I mean, Andy Flower is a very, very thorough coach. And you imagine him just allowing all of his players to become this kind of free-spirited team. It must have taken a lot for Andy to actually do that. So you've got to give hats off to him as a from a coach's point of view, just to go. I mean, as I said, he did start nipping a little bit when he got to semi-final stage and we were out till 2 o'clock in the morning in St. Lucia. And he was like, Collie, you know, lads need to calm down. We're at the final note. Let's go harder. We're all right.
So good. I find that fascinating because, like you said, I can't imagine actually him sort of letting go. But I think it's funny, the closer you got to winning the trophy, he started trying to get that control back a bit. I like that. Just finally, gents, before we sort of let you get off, I mean, the crowd, the whole atmosphere. I mean, cricket in the Caribbean is awesome, isn't it? Because the crowds just love it. They don't care who's playing particularly. Obviously, if the Windies are playing, it's a different matter all completely. But if you've got two neutral sides, they just go mad for brilliant cricket, the atmosphere, the sun's out. It's a World Cup. It's a brilliant tournament. You obviously get home to loads of fanfare, and the fact that you've won the World Cup probably with slightly dusty heads as well. And you get, you know, like you said, the Prime Minister calling you Colin and all this type of stuff. Just kind of give us, like, each of you. I'll start with Siddy, Tim, and then Collie to wrap things up. Just your overriding final kind of thoughts on it, because try and package it all up into something if you can. I know it's quite impossible because we've talked for about 25 minutes here and we're still going.
Yes, but special, just really, really special moment personally for myself, and you know, the memories I'll never, ever, ever forget. You know, the team, you know, how we celebrated, the nights out that we had, the drunkenness, you know. So you might have a medal or that's against your name now, you're a World Cup winner. But for me, it's the memories, you know, the celebrations is something I'll never, ever forget, ever, like ever, ever.
Rizzy?
Yeah, similar. I think it's up there, one of my most treasured memories of cricket. I think it kind of, we did get back and there was a little bit of a fanfare, but I think what you guys like alluded to at the start of the show, it kind of went under the radar because literally we were in between so much cricket, which we were winning. So it was a very successful period for us in all three formats. I think at one time we were World Cup winners. We were number one in Test cricket and we were number one in 50 over cricket as well. We were number one in all three forms. And I think that's why it kind of went under the radar a little bit.
And then you won the Ashes as well, didn't you? And it was like almost like a... Man, you know, do you reckon people went, oh, England cricket have won again? What a shock. Do you reckon
I think it was like that. And it was Ashes down under, and we'd just come from India and we'd just beaten them, you know. Or maybe that was straight after the Ashes or whatever. But yeah, it was such a successful period for English cricket. And it did go slightly under the radar, did the T20 World Cup. I think all the oldies are still calling it pajama cricket. And, you know, all the guys that aren't quite into T20, it wasn't as big as what it is now with the IPL and stuff like that, which is, you know, huge, as tournaments starting all over the place. But yeah, I think my overriding emotion and feeling was just a massive sense of fun and enjoyment. And that's, you know, I've taken a lot of the way I play my cricket from then on, from that team and how we played, and, you know, the ultimate positiveness of college chat, the language that he used. The, you know, there was never a negative thought. It was like, if you want to, you know, go out and smack it, you go smack it. I mean, we had, I can't remember, in the final, we had like four overs left, but Collie was just like, Shane Watson, I'm having a piece of you, son. I'm finishing it this over, you know? And it was that kind of mentality that, you know, drove us forward in that comp and allowed us to win it, and what I've taken into my cricket from then.
Love it. And Collie, can England win the World Cup this year? Because there's a bit of symmetry, isn't there? There's the T20 World Cup, if things go ahead, the way they're kind of scheduled to, and then the Ashes. So what's, you know, do you reckon that some of the current lot should perhaps listen to this call?
Well, the current lot don't have to listen to this call because that's how they play their cricket now. And Owen Morgan has brought that kind of mentality into the team. And we've seen it over the last 4 years of what he's done in the white ball cricket. And it's taken our game to the next level. He's created a legacy that this isn't just going to you know, work for the next 6 months. This is something that is going to work in white ball cricket for decades to come, because it's so ingrained and so powerful, the culture now, that he's brought into the team. You're seeing the next level of players coming through and their approach in county cricket. It's we've got a load of players who the skill levels and the approach that they have, who could play in that international team. So we've got a hell of a chance, a great chance. We'll be obviously one of the favourites going in there, which is exciting. It can be done again. They were close in 2016, I think it was, in Calcutta. But, you know, they couldn't be in a more suited and better position than they are now. They've got an amazing team and an amazing approach, a great leader who's experienced everything. So it's, so, you know, touch wood, it's looking good. But T20 cricket, as we always know, it's not always black and white. So you just get one performance from the opposition out of one of their players and you could be in trouble. But just going back to, you know, that's further down the line. But just going back to your question, what did that T20 World Cup bring? I'm a big believer in creating memories. And, you know, we are very privileged position of playing for your country. And that means a hell of a lot to us. And it means a hell of a lot to when you're in Barbados, when you see all the English flags and you're the Barmy Army. And it was a home fixture. And it was the perfect storm. To me, it couldn't get any better because you were playing Australia, one of the toughest oppositions you can come across. You're playing in a great venue and you've got all those English supporters who just getting behind the team. And there was a lot of nerves around. I was very, very nervous on the morning. I remember leading into it. But when I was leading the team out, we have these mascots who, you obviously, you grab the hand and you lead them out and you do the national anthem. And I remember grabbing the mascots and I said to the young girl, I said, what's your name? And she said, Lucky. And I promise you, I just literally, from that moment, I just went and just calmed completely. I just went, perfect, Lucky. I'm really happy to have met you. Thank you very much. And I remember just holding her hand and she led us out to the lineup and we sang the national anthem and we sang it loud. And we always made sure we could hear each other. I mean, the worst voices ever. And I just calmed down from that point. I just knew we were going to win that day. And it was just one of those moments where, and I'm not usually softy and all that kind of stuff, but to me, it was just the perfect storm. Everything just went perfectly. And everyone who was involved deserved to lift that trophy on the podium afterwards. It was such a good feeling. And if you could bottle that feeling up, well, I tell you what, I'd open it every single day and try to feel it again because it didn't get any better than that.
Amazing. I think Lucky needs a medal. We need to track him down and find him. Barmy Army will track Lucky down and give her a medal. just on that note, fellas, has anyone got their medal within reaching distance or within a short walk so you can show our viewers what that winning World Cup medal looks like?
This is going to sound terrible. I can't even find mine. Yeah, I'm good as...
Come on. Rez, have you got... I've got mine in... Yeah, I could get it. I could go get it if people want to see.
It's in his pocket, look.
Yeah. I haven't actually got a clue where mine is either.
Give us a second.
Rez, you've got all those man of the match champagne bottles behind you and your World Cup winners nowhere to be seen. What's that all about?
Well, it's in a safe place, but I forgot where that was. Like, we've moved...
like a squirrel.
We've moved house about three times. well, four or five times since we won that comp. So I understand, got a clue where it is.
You must have upgraded, Brezzy, when you won the World Cup. You went from a 3-bed to a 6-bed, did you?
Not quite, Paul. Ashes did a bit for it. Like,
did he coming back in with his medal? Has he got it for us?
Got it. I've got it.
Love
my message. Got it framed, but it said "Wiki curled whoop" on it. I'm joking. So there it is to all the Barmy Army.
Fantastic. Look at that.
So she got it framed for me, bless her.
I remember it looking pride, like that, Sid.
Pride of place.
Excellent. In the bar, of course.
In the bar while I'm drinking gin or rum. As it should be.
I think I've actually got a stump from stump from the World Cup. Yeah.
Go on. One of these. Have a look. Collie, you're right to shame here, by the way.
I know. I'm literally
for as well.
So I've got me caps nice up. Right.
Yeah.
I tell you what, lad,
as well, I've got to blow smoke up Collie's backside because he hit the winning runs and he gave me the ball.
Amazing.
He passed it to me because it was my benefit, my testimonial that year. And he, you know, again, those are things that you don't forget. And I've never forgot that Collie went out of his way to give me the ball that we won the World Cup with.
What did I chase after the ball and get the ball for you?
Yeah.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
Do you reckon that's it, lads?
I reckon that's from Sri Lanka in about 2007, that present.
Sri Lanka? Nah, it's definitely... I don't have the Sri Lanka ones. I think it's... That's World Cup, I think. Or India.
Nice stumps anyway, mate. Really nice stumps.
There's one somewhere.
To be fair, now I've seen that medal. I think it is. I think I've seen it upstairs in me, but I only moved house a few months ago and I think I've seen it in a box upstairs. But I have got one thing that I do.
Here we go. We're gonna
I've just built a TV unit, so I've got a few things on there, and I do keep.
That's very good.
And
I've seen some sun that one.
That to me is, I don't know whether you can. It's obviously got the 622 on the back, but it stinks, honestly.
But it smells of champagne and cigars.
But that's. That to me is just encapsulates everything.
Yeah,
not just Test cricket, but that's England. So I do honestly, this is my pride and joy. I keep that in it. Obviously, I want to see it every day, so I do keep that somewhere where I can see it every day.
Not surprised. Gents, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much. Thank you. Absolutely love that. Could have talked about it for another hour or so. So thanks so much for joining us. Pleasure.
And, pleasure, guys.
We'll talk again about it in another 10 years or something. All right.
Well done, lads. Cheers. Good luck, Reggie. Keep cheering. See you, lads.
Lads. Bye.
Cheers, City. Cheers, lads. Yeah. Bye.
See you later, boys.
Podcast Network.